a future sovereign who was, at the moment, far too concerned with arranging sheets of ivory washi paper on the table before him, smoothing their surfaces, anchoring their edges with weights, preparing to practice his calligraphy. Roku looked at Kenshin, as though he expected Kenshin to elaborate further on the matter of Mariko's untimely death, before smiling to himself and slowly circling an ink stick in the well of a carved inkstone to his right. In moments like these, Kenshin wished Mariko were at his side. She would be thinking far in advance of what anyone might do or say, holding her emotions close and in check. His sister was leagues ahead of anyone in most conversations, far past anyone's present. In contrast, Kenshin often found himself crashing through the underbrush of conversations Mariko skirted with ease. It was not that his sister was a particularly gifted conversationalist. It was more that she always seemed to know what people intended to say, even before they did. She read people much like she read books. Such ability would be of great use to Kenshin right now. But he was a warrior, not an envoy or a strategist. Kenshin cleared his throat.
"I do not believe Mariko to be dead, Your Highness."
He glanced toward his sister's betrothed to see if he could sense any reaction. Minamoto Raiden exchanged a wordless conversation with his brother, but Kenshin could not glean the sentiment behind his expression. It could be worry, it could be anger, it could be suspicion. Or perhaps it could be all of these things. It never ceased to frustrate Kenshin how he was able to notice tangible things with the eye of a hawk. How the smallest detail was never missed, but when it came to analyzing the unseen, the unspoken subtleties of life, he was far from being a hawk. He was more of a mole, wandering through a world of darkness. Even with Amaya, he'd been painfully unaware of her feelings until it was far too late. After a time, Minamoto Raiden took a steadying breath. He traded another glance with the Crown Prince, whose expression remained neutral. Then he leaned forward, almost conspiratorially.
"Kenshin-sama," his sister's betrothed began. "I was told Mariko's convoy had been attacked in Jukai Forest by a band of thieves. Several members of my father's personal guard believe it to be the work of the Black Clan, though I'm not as inclined to agree. It seems far too simple, far too predictable. Not to mention, beyond the typical behavior of the Black Clan." He rested an elbow on a knee, inclining toward Kenshin even farther.
"Is it possible your sister still lives, despite all the evidence to the contrary?" As Raiden spoke, concern seeped into the small lines framing his mouth. He was only 19 years old, but the effect of this concern made him appear battle-hardened, weary. The sight strangely comforted Kenshin, as did the words his sister's betrothed spoke. They were in keeping with Kenshin's earlier thoughts, but it was also possible this was a ruse meant to earn his trust, meant to plant seeds of unforeseen doubt. Yet Minamoto Raiden did seem far less calculating than the Crown Prince, far less conniving. And Kenshin appreciated how he appeared to value forthrightness more than his younger brother. Raiden's character was more in keeping with his own. Since this marked Kenshin's first interaction with his sister's betrothed, these feelings set his mind somewhat at ease. At this moment, any sign of subterfuge remained solely in the black eyes of the Crown Prince. The slight, pale boy, clad in golden silk, calmly practicing his shodo. Perhaps Minamoto Roku had been the one to orchestrate the attack on Mariko's convoy, and yet, a part of Kenshin did not quite believe the Crown Prince would strike out at his own brother by murdering Raiden's future wife. After all, what would he have to gain by doing so? Roku was already first in line to the throne. And not once in all his years had Kinshin heard of Raiden having designs to usurp his younger brother. They could easily have been at war with each other. Brothers in similar situations had often killed each other for power in the past. But that did not appear to be the case here. By all accounts, these two brothers, despite the enmity between their birth mothers, were close friends, trusted confidants. Perhaps Kenshin had been wrong to suspect that members of the nobility had plotted to murder his sister, that someone in Ninako had tried to thwart the nuptials between the emperor's firstborn son and the daughter of an ambitious daimyo. Or perhaps Minamoto Raiden was merely good at reading people as well. As though he could hear the tenor of Kenshin's thoughts, Raiden smiled reassuringly. He began to speak again, but was immediately silenced by his younger brother. The crown prince shot a pointed look their way. As soon as Roku made certain he held their attention, his eyes drifted toward the beautifully carved folding screen to his left. "This is not the place to discuss such things," he said in a harsh whisper. "The walls of Heian Castle possess ears." The last was said in a barely audible tone, a cultivated whisper belying his earlier disinterest. Following this admonition, the crown prince took hold of his right sleeve and dipped his brush in ink once more, positioning the bristles above the washi paper at a perfect angle. "Perhaps it would be nice to share some tea with us later, Kenshin-sama," he said, his voice as mild as before, filled with that same feigned lack of interest, but spoken in a tenor meant to be overheard, meant to be interpreted by attending servants and chance observers alike. In his zeal to learn the truth, Kenshin had almost forgotten. Inako was first and foremost a city of secrets, ones to be stolen and sold off to the highest bidder at first chance. Nodding in understanding, Raiden stood swiftly. "Will you be our guest this evening, Kenshin-sama?" Kenshin was not fool enough to question the conversation's rapid change in course. He may not be well-versed in recognizing emotion, but he was the Dragon of Kai, and he knew the sharp tang of fresh blood, of a path to be followed. Quietly, carefully. "I would be honored, my lord," Kenshin said. "Where is it you wish to go?" Raiden grinned, and the sight greatly reminded Kenshin of a snarling bear. His voice dropped until it became more breath than sound. "The finest tea house in Hanami." Hanami. Mariko had been to Inako once when she was younger, as a girl. As a boy, the sights of the Imperial City were entirely different, and it was not merely because a blindfold had been torn from her eyes only moments before. Everything seemed crisper. Colors seemed more alive. Scents flooded her nostrils, and sights flashed across her vision. Marinated squid sizzling over an open flame, vividly dyed paper lanterns strung above bolts of lustrous silk, displays of painted fans and freshly sliced persimmons, creamy bean curd floating in barrels of cold water. She smelled and tasted everything in the air with the abandon of a girl in a fevered dream. Mariko felt free, freer than she could remember feeling in quite some time, her current situation notwithstanding. "At least in Inako, there's little chance of me being snared by a blood-draining tree or being pelted by sharp rocks." Ranmaru studied her, caught her grinning with open glee. "Is this your first visit to the Imperial City?" Mariko thought quickly. "Yes." Her answer more easily explained how enthralled she was. It also helped circumvent any further inquiries about her past. The Black Clan had been blessedly uninterested in who she was before she came to the forest, and Mariko wished to keep it that way, for as long as she could.
"Try not to appear so green once we arrive at the tea house," Okami said from his perch atop his warhorse to her right. Mariko wrapped her fingers tightly around her reins, struggling to bite her tongue.
to ignore the rope trailing from Okami's horse to hers, keeping her tethered to the wolf's side. At her left, Ranmaru laughed, his brown eyes sparkling. "Or when you first set eyes on Yumi, the most beautiful girl in the Empire."
"I doubt Lord Lackbeard has ever seen a Geiko before in his life," Okami said, "much less been with a beautiful girl."
Even as he provoked her, Okami maintained a cool affect, one of careful indifference.
A Geiko?
So they were not traveling to a mere house of ill repute, as she'd initially surmised. A Geiko would never set foot in such a den of iniquity. Regardless, Mariko kept silent, stewing in unspoken reprisals. Ranmaru's brows arched. "Tell us, Lord Lackbeard, are you indeed untried?" She shifted uncomfortably in her seat. Of all the questions for Ranmaru to ask, of course he would choose that one. Men left to their own devices were so sadly predictable.
"I am not untried. I have been with many women."
Her words were half true, at least. She was no longer a maid, though the one and only occasion had not involved another girl. It had involved rebellion. Mariko recalled the face of the young stable boy fated to accompany his master to her father's province one spring morning not so long ago. She remembered the boy's kind smile, his enthusiasm, his obliviousness. It was his smile that had drawn Mariko to him, drawn him into a sun-drenched hayloft to while away a moment in her embrace. He'd been kind, gentle. Only hours later had a horrible realization shaken Mariko to her core. Her actions that afternoon could have resulted in this kind and gentle boy's death. Not once, not in the entire time they'd spent lazing about in the fragrant hay, had she paused to consider what might happen to the boy if they were caught. Her anger with her parents had been too sharp, her wish for control far too blinding. She considered Okami's words from a fortnight past. "Anger is an emotion that poisons all else." Even in Mariko's thoughts, it did not sit well to admit the wolf might be right about something. The morning of her undoing, she'd dressed in the clothing of a peasant. In this disguise, Mariko had seduced the stable boy, given him the gift her parents had recently traded for the Emperor's favor. The gift her parents had calculatingly sold. Despite the risks, not once had Mariko regretted her decision, though the act itself was awkward. Not unpleasant, but definitely not worth the fuss, and absolutely not worth ceding control. But it had been Mariko's first time, and for that one time only, she'd wanted her body to be her own. The decision to be hers, and hers alone. Her body was not for sale. It did not belong to her parents to sell to the highest bidder. Nor did it belong to Minamoto Raiden or to any other man. She remembered Chiyo telling her that finding one's match was like finding one's other half. Mariko had never understood the notion. She was not a half. She was wholly her own. A hand waved before her face. When Mariko's vision cleared, Ranmaru's features came into focus as he attempted to draw her back into the present.
"What were you thinking about just now?" the leader of the Black Clan asked. "You disappeared." Though his words were nonchalant, his look was as sharp as a razor.
"Family," she said smoothly, "and entitlement." Ahead of them, Mariko thought she saw Okami slow his horse, but he did not look back. Nor did he lean toward their conversation. It was possible she had imagined him easing up on his pace. Ranmaru continued studying her sidelong.
"Interesting that you link the two together."
"I don't find it interesting at all. Family can entitle you to many things. It can also feel entitled to much from you in return."
"Is that why you ran away from yours?"
Mariko swallowed. She'd known all along she could not escape answering questions about her past. Men like Ranmaru, even ones as young as he, with such ready charm, did not rise to positions of power on blind faith alone. A simple lie, threaded from truth, could be Mariko's best answer. My father arranged for me to marry. I wished to do otherwise. When we could not come to an agreement on the matter, I left. She kept her explanation unembellished, abrupt. You wished to marry someone else? No. So then, you are not one of those poor fools enamored by the idea of love? He teased. She scowled. Certainly not. At least in this, a lie was unnecessary. You don't believe your great love is out there, simply waiting to be found? Do you? Mariko pitched her voice low, graveled with disbelief. Ranmaru's broad lips spread into an easy smile. I believe the stars align so that souls can find one another. Whether they are meant to be souls in love or souls in life remains to be seen. Mariko found herself momentarily at a loss. It was a lovely sentiment. Were she dressed in the fine silks of a young girl, she would have felt her gaze soften, her cheeks grow pink. Beautiful words were beautiful words, even to the most practical of minds. Instead, Mariko focused on the worn fabric of her reins, coughed with undisguised discomfort. There, Ranmaru pronounced, his tone one of supreme self-satisfaction. I've managed to embarrass Lord Lackbeard simply by talking about love, and not once did I mention anything about women. He turned toward Okami, his palm outstretched. You owe me 5 ryo. Mariko froze in her saddle, her posture rigid. That is a lie. Which part? Ranmaru blinked. You mentioned Yumi, she sniffed, deepened her speech to a drone. The most beautiful girl in the empire. At that, the wolf started to laugh. It began softly like the rumble of a drum. Then it rose to a steadying rain. It wasn't a rich kind of laughter. Its sound didn't fill Mariko's ears with its honeyed resonance. But it was clear and deep, much like the color of his eyes. And a part of her couldn't help but think, were he another boy in another time, in another place? Mariko would have liked to hear Okami's laughter. Would have enjoyed being the cause of it. But he was a member of the Black Clan, the band of mercenaries who had tried to kill her, who had slaughtered Chiyo and Nobutada. She hated this boy and all he stood for. It was dangerous for her to consider anything else, even for a moment. Mariko grasped her reins tighter, as though she were taking firm hold of herself. Do I receive any share of the gold? She looked to Okami, her features expectant. No. He didn't hesitate before responding. I saved you money. Shouldn't I receive at least half of it as a reward? Taking half my money isn't saving me anything. She spurred her horse closer to his. You thought Ranmaru could embarrass me by talking about love? A sneer touched the edges of her lips. I think it's remarkably easy to provoke certain reactions from you. Mariko flinched, opened her mouth, closed it. Okami smiled. It's better when you say nothing. That way I don't have to point out how freely you lie. He rode on, the rope behind him losing its slack. Mariko gritted her teeth, willing herself silent. Her nose scrunched as a cart filled with manure passed by. Flies buzzed before her face, and she fended them off with a wave of one hand. She did not care if Okami found her dishonest. She found him dishonorable, which was far worse. In an attempt to drown out her irritation, Mariko pitched her voice louder. All matters of love make little sense to me anyway, as do most things that cannot be proved as fact.
Why is that? Ranmaru asked.
Love is... She shifted in her saddle, fighting to sit taller, to convey a larger sense of self. It isn't something that can be understood or explained. It's intangible. like magic. Those who do not possess its power can never fully grasp it.
Ranmaru inclined his head. That sounds rather sad. And smells like horseshit, Okami said over his shoulder. Like the words of a boy with a great deal left to learn.
Once more, Mariko bristled at his judgment. Only a boy with a great deal left to learn himself would ever think that of someone else.
Or one with a great deal of regret, Ranmaru said softly, soberly. Okami did not look their way as he spoke. There is indeed a great deal of regret in my life.
Even from a distance, Mariko saw a shadow descend on his face. For once, she thought she might catch a glimpse of vulnerability in the wolf. She leaned in closer, waiting. Her breath bated. If something, anything, made the Black Clan's champion weak, Mariko desperately wished to know what it was. Follow orders, engender trust, strike when they least expect it.
My life has been filled with death and lies and loose women.
Okami pushed back a fall of black hair, meeting her gaze, holding her there. Rapt.
I regret everything else.
He smiled, his hooded, heavy-lidded eyes brimming with mockery. Truly, he was hopeless. Mariko almost snarled in frustration. She bit down on her cheek to keep silent, to control her need to rebuke. This time, Okami definitely slowed the pace of his horse to match that of Mariko. He drew alongside her, though he did not glance her way for some time.
So you don't believe in silly sentiments like love?
He fixed that same appreciative look on her from before, the one tinged in approval. It only compelled Mariko's need to disagree. I didn't say that.
You said you preferred things that can be proved as fact.
I meant that it's difficult to prove a feeling as fact. But I've seen it happen before. Mariko had watched Muramasa Amaya, the daughter of her father's famed metalsmith, fall in love with Kenshin. Foolishly, desperately in love with him. When they were younger, her brother had failed to notice the signs, but Mariko had seen them. In moments when Amaya thought no one was looking, her attention would flit to Kenshin, linger for a spell. The look Mariko saw there often left her feeling hollow, often left her wishing someone would look at her that way. Just once.
Did it look like magic?
Okami asked, his tone circumspect. Mariko expected him to mock her again, but when she turned toward him, bracing herself for his biting scorn, she did not see any evidence of it. His eyes were clear pools of deep water, hiding nothing. Two black mirrors, drawing her in, making her question. A brush of heat danced across her skin. It did. Mariko fought to keep her voice even. She looked at me as though I were magic. Okami's eyes remained constant, a sky without stars. It was Mariko who turned away first, only to catch Ranmaru laughing once more. With a click of his tongue, Okami prodded his horse forward, well beyond earshot, the rope between them going taut. Again, Mariko fidgeted in her seat, wishing for all the world that she'd change the subject. That she could turn back time and begin this conversation anew.
Have you ever loved anyone?
She asked Ranmaru bluntly, pleased to see him startle, if only for a heartbeat. Serves him right for starting this mess. Ranmaru hesitated before replying.
Yes.
Did it feel like magic? Irritation bled into each syllable. Sometimes it does. But his smile was not from the heart. Other times, it feels like an endless siege. She shot him a quizzical glance. Ranmaru smiled brighter, as though he were coaxing himself beyond the truth. I suspect you will understand what I mean soon. He sat forward again, cutting off their conversation before it could start, no longer willing to permit Mariko any glimpse into his life. Despite her growing curiosity, Mariko knew not to press further. They continued toward the center of Inako, toward a winding river covered in layers of drying petals. When they rounded a bend in the road, an arched bridge of dark gray stone emerged before them, its gritty surface stained green with lichen, dripping with moss. Before crossing, the trio tethered their horses to a post and paid a hunched old man to watch their steeds. Mariko's eyes passed over the row of horses already under his care. At first, it all seemed so silly to her. Anyone with the smallest dagger could rob the old man at any time. But the types of horses left in his charge were fine beasts, bridled with brightly colored reins, with tassels fringed in gold and silver, emblazoned with the crests of Inako's finest families. Only fools would steal from the most powerful people in the Imperial City. Fools like the Black Clan. The river before Mariko flowed at a leisurely pace. The lanterns hanging from the balustrades on either side of the bridge swayed brightly. At its end, along the opposite riverfront, a line of dogwoods interspersed with cherry trees shaded everything from view, kept it hidden, secret. The scent of jasmine and musk curled its invisible fingers toward them, beckoning them closer. When Mariko followed Okami and Ranmaru across the bridge, a shower of pink and white petals caressed her skin before cascading into the water like thick flakes of snow. She had never seen anything like this before. Without being told, Mariko knew they were crossing into one of the most fabled districts of the Imperial City, Hanami. At a distance, the single-storied structure appeared to be nothing more than a tea house. Mariko, Okami, and Ranmaru waited outside a simple gate, rang a simple, unremarkable bell. Its liquid chime coiled into an almost summer sunset, a sky lingering in the blue hour just beyond nightfall. The wicket gate creaked open, and Mariko trailed behind Okami and Ranmaru as they followed a clean-faced young woman clad in a silk kimono. Her steps were light, quick, as though she were skimming across the clouds. She led them to a sliding door, pausing only to allow them passage. When the sight before her centered, Mariko stopped short, fought to keep from gasping. This was anything but a simple tea house. Not once in her life had Mariko ever dreamed of anything its equal. The pavers winding across a lush green garden were smooth and black, perfectly rounded. Some ingenious system, completely obscured from view, had redirected a bubbling brook and sent it churning down a set of three waterfalls, each no higher than the length of Mariko's arm. At the base of these falls, swirling foam gathered around glossy lily pads and snow-white lotus blossoms. Tiny golden koi darted beneath the surface of a small blue lagoon. Every outer wall of the main teahouse was constructed of sliding screen doors framed in latticed wood. When Mariko looked closer, she realized the screens were not made of rice paper, as was typical. Instead, they were made of thin silk, decadent to a fault. Interspersed between the low-hanging eaves of the roof were many cast-iron lanterns made to look like miniature pagodas. Tongues of blue flame licked between their honeycombed slats. Squat brass braziers perfumed the air with an intoxicating mixture of night-blooming jasmine and clean white musk. Though dusk had only just fallen, the tea house was ablaze in warmth and light. The sounds beyond the screens were ones of lilting music and shared merriment. Mariko had expected to find this tea house in Hanami somewhat sordid, a place men went to lose themselves in fantasy. Thus far, she had seen nothing of the sort. She'd seen only tranquil beauty, felt nothing but serenity. But Mariko knew better than to trust these feelings. They were obviously part of a ploy to disarm even the most critical of patrons. Time would soon reveal the truth. When Ranmaru removed his sandals and stepped onto the landing of the tea house, Mariko followed suit. She straightened her robes, suddenly conscious of a discomforting fact. She was not dressed appropriately. Her clothes were far too big. After the garments had first been loaned to her, Mariko had suspected they belonged to Ren. He was the only member of the Black Clan with comparable height. At the time, it had not bothered Mariko to wear something ill-fitting and past the fashions of the Imperial City. Nor had it bothered her to wear Ren's clothing. She'd seen no reason to care what anyone thought of her appearance. Until now, Mariko had not even paid attention to what her compatriots wore, for it too had seemed immaterial. When amongst men, she'd found fine clothing to be of blessedly little concern. But now, as Ranmaru and Okami turned to wait for her, Mariko suddenly felt acutely aware of her appearance. Almost self-conscious. A feeling she disdained. So much like a girl, despite all her efforts to the contrary. Ranmaru's knee-length robe was made of fine dark green silk. He'd layered it over pleated hakama trousers, and had managed to keep himself immaculate and unrumpled all throughout the long ride from the forest into the Imperial City. Okami wore a similarly styled robe of rich, deep blue, except that his haori hung open, layered atop a kosode of white silk, belted by a black cord. Though these young men were in truth nothing but a pair of ronin, and notorious thieves to boot, they looked as though they belonged here, in an elegant tea house of wonder and mystery. While Mariko greatly resembled a scraggly alley cat, wrung out to dry after a long spring rain. I suppose it can't be helped. Donning a mask of fortitude, Mariko forced herself forward, stopped short just beside Okami. He turned away just as swiftly, pausing only to rinse his hands in a basin filled with water, scented by fresh rose petals. Mariko mimicked his actions, feeling all the while as though she did not belong. As though at any moment, someone would tear the mask from her face and reveal her to the world as the fraud she was. A silk-screened door slid open before them, unveiling another layer of the hidden splendor of Hanami. Another layer of this place of beauty and excess. Mariko had quietly sneered at the tales of this excess for many years. Geiko were referred to as living, floating works of art. The very idea had ruffled her sensibilities. That a beautiful woman could be nothing more than a form of entertainment, left to the vices and pleasures of men. But as Mariko watched, transfixed, while a geiko clad in layers of Tatsumura silk drifted across the spotless tatami mats, she realized her first mistake. This young woman did not stand or move from a place of subservience, nor did she convey any sense that her existence was based solely on the whims of men. Not once did the geiko's gaze register the newest arrivals. Her head was high, her gait proud. The poise with which she moved, the grace with which she took each of her steps, was a clear testament to years of training and tradition. The young woman was not a plaything, not at all. As she walked, she tantalized, performed each step as a dancer would on a stage, painted as an artist would across a canvas, with nothing but the simplest of motions. Once the geiko had crossed to the other side of the long rectangular tea room, she turned with studied elegance and knelt in one corner, smoothing the folds of her kimono beneath her knees in one even swipe. An attendant handed her a gleaming wooden shamisen. When the girl closed her eyes and began to strum its strings with a carved ivory pick, her music, soft and glowing with the same amber light emanating from the hanging lanterns, Mariko fell upon a second realization. She'd judged something before she'd ever given it an opportunity, the same opportunity Mariko had requested from Yoshi that first day at the Black Clan's encampment. The music the geiko played was haunting. a song filled with veiled feeling. Its rhythm was torrid, yet its melody did not burn. Rather, it hypnotized. The low, constant buzz of the shamisen's deepest string rumbled throughout the space, lulling Mariko into a near stupor. There was such pride in the way the geiko performed, such passion. She played for herself, first and foremost, and Mariko appreciated it more than she could ever have put to words. Once the song was finished, Mariko, Ranmaru, and Okami took their places at a set of individual tray tables on one side of the rectangular room. Two neat rows ringed the perimeter, parallel to each other. The floors were covered in freshly woven tatami mats, their edges trimmed in deep purple silk. Mariko sat before one of these trays, again catching herself thoughtlessly imitating each of Okami's motions, hating herself for it. As though she could ever wish to emulate anyone like him, anyone so smug, so uninterested in anything of import. Just as Mariko had finished arranging the hem of her robes around her, a bowl of glazed black porcelain, filled with fragrant rice, was placed before her. Lacquered chopsticks were rested atop a stand of polished jade. More female attendants in the same simple silk of the girl at the teahouse gates bore individual servings of food, fillets of amberjack covered in a sauce of fresh sorrel and white miso paste, a cut of creamy bream served alongside a small bowl of ponzu, cool abalone marinated in sweetened soy sauce and topped with finely diced chives. When Mariko touched the tip of her chopsticks to the amberjack, the fish fell apart in flakes. Flakes that melted in her mouth, buttery and rich on her tongue. Hand-painted flagons of sake and matching cups were set before each of the tea house's guests. Soon the room was filled to capacity, and the topic of conversation descended to winking suggestion, became bawdier, louder. Men. Mariko shook her head and looked around, staving off the flush creeping into her cheeks. Slants of light emanated from matching miniature pagoda lanterns hanging at intervals around the room. The flames within flickered through the intricate slats, creating shadows that danced through the screens, throwing light across the silk-covered walls. After Mariko finished consuming her food, the sliding door at the opposite end of the main tea room slipped open. At first, Mariko thought the girl standing before them was simply younger than all the other geiko present. Perhaps even younger than Mariko herself. When the girl began gliding by, each of her steps a gentle brush across the woven mats, Mariko saw the flash of padded red silk positioned in the center of her hair, just above her nape. It was the sign of a maiko, an apprentice geiko, who had not yet established her place among the official ranks of floating art in Hanami. The train of the maiko's long kimono rippled behind her, like a soft swirl of wind. On her best day, Mariko could not imagine the skill it took to walk with such grace when burdened by the weight of 3 underrobes and a heavily embroidered kimono of brocaded turquoise and pale pink silk. Her obi alone looked as though it weighed nearly a stone, its knot at her back ornate and immense. Just as she passed Mariko, the maiko leveled a smile at her. A smile that made Mariko think this girl knew the answer to any question ever asked. The maiko's prowess in the art of flirtation did nothing to hide the calculating intelligence in her painted eyes. If Mariko had had to guess, she'd have said this girl possessed a formidable mind as well. The touch of hardness in her gaze made her appear all the more mysterious. Every man in the room was entranced. Okami watched the maiko float to the other side of the room and nodded once when she looked his way. Ranmaru followed her with his eyes, ready and willing to catch her should she begin to fall, even from across the room. Though Mariko did not miss the glimmer of pain, the undercurrent of unhappiness,
that lingered on the leader of the Black Clan's face as he watched the Maiko pass him by without a single glance in his direction. This must have been what Ranmaru meant earlier. This Maiko had to be the source of his endless siege, and a possible weakness. Her interest heightened at this realization, but Mariko held her emotions in check, just as cool and as even as the wolf. Once the Maiko faced the wall on the opposite side of the tea room, she stopped, turned slowly, her movements perfectly timed with the strum of the shamisen. From the pocket of one long sleeve, the Maiko removed two folded silk fans. With a quick snap, she opened them, striking a lingering pose, glancing over her shoulder at the rapt audience behind her. As she faced them, the girl twirled one fan around her first finger in a spinning circle, like a delicate windmill. The other, she fluttered across the sea of mesmerized faces, wafting the scent of sweet plum and honeysuckle their way. She continued floating across the mats, coiling and catching her fans in perfect unison with the rise and fall of the music. Though Mariko did not see anything sensual about the dance, she nevertheless felt titillated at its sight. Something about it seemed forbidden, illicit. Mariko knew she'd been granted a remarkable opportunity. How many noble women before her had been inside a tea house in Hanami, had witnessed firsthand the famed art of the Geiko, an art that had been carefully controlled and kept secret from her kind for so many centuries. The experience opened Mariko's mind to several new considerations. This girl could not be older than her own 17 years. Briefly, she wondered if the Maiko had had a choice in her future, or if, like Mariko, the choice had been made for her by another. A sister, a father, a mother, an aunt. But for a twist of fate, this girl could have been Mariko, and Mariko could have been her. Something about the Maiko's performance struck Mariko in the way willow trees often did. So profoundly beautiful, yet hauntingly sad. A smattering of applause rang through the room when the Maiko finished her fan dance. She bowed, then swished in their direction. Again, the beautiful girl ignored Ranmaru, sweeping past him almost coldly, ignoring the flash of hurt that rippled across his face. Then, the Maiko fired another winsome smile at Mariko before settling beside Okami. Was this girl the one Okami visited every other day in Inako? Would Okami knowingly conduct an affair with the girl of Ranmaru's heart? Even for the wolf, this seemed needlessly cruel, not to mention a waste of time and money and energy. When the lovely Maiko leaned toward Okami's ear, brushing the snowy petals of her hairpiece across his angled jaw, a faintly unsettling sensation took hold of Mariko's stomach. She questioned it for an instant, and annoyance quickly rose in its place. She was not angry at the Maiko. The mere thought was ridiculous. Whether or not the girl took advantage of Okami and Ranmaru, spending the former's coin and breaking the latter's heart, was not Mariko's concern. Unless, of course, she could use either to her advantage. Mariko conceded that perhaps a part of her was merely annoyed by the way the girl manipulated one boy to cause another boy pain. Chiyo had often gossiped about servant girls who behaved in such a manner, and Mariko had never liked it. But why should she care what these idiot boys did with their time and their money? The sake was clearly taking root in her head. "Okami-sama," the Maiko said, her voice a perfect mixture of shy and coy. "Thank you for coming to see me tonight." Her exquisite eyes slid toward Ranmaru with absolute intention. Then her gaze hardened once more, if only for an instant. Another ripple of exasperation shot down Mariko's spine. The Maiko knowingly played with fire, knowingly toyed with Ranmaru's feelings. But to what end? And was there a way Mariko could leverage the girl's end
to achieve her own goals? Lamaiko inclined her head, drawing even closer to Okami, and continued whispering in his ear. After a time, he nodded indulgently, and the girl smiled. She drew up one kimono sleeve to pour him a cup of hot tea, each of her movements like liquid smoke. The more time transpired, the more it became apparent, irrespective of the Maiko's ulterior motives with regard to Ranmaru, she and Okami shared an obvious connection. Their conversation was hushed, intimate. Not once did an awkward moment pass between the two. Okami never needed to ask for anything. The Maiko anticipated his every wish, all while gazing at him with perfect trust. The sight faintly disgusted Mariko. Was this how every young woman appeared in the company of handsome young men? How ridiculous! No wonder young men craved spending time in places like Hanami. Mariko would have wagered everything she had that this Maiko was the reason Okami traveled so often to Inako. A lock clicked open in Mariko's mind. Perhaps this girl was also the one connecting the Black Clan to its employers, providing the mercenaries entry to the Imperial City's many secrets. Geiko were famous for keeping and disseminating some of the most valuable information amongst the nobility. Their unfettered access to men of power often gave them advantage in matters of state. Perhaps this girl had the answers Mariko so desperately sought. The Maiko unfolded to her feet in a whisper of silk. As she passed Ranmaru, he began to stand.
"Yumi," he said softly.
"Please." The girl shot a biting glare at the leader of the Black Clan before quitting the tea room entirely. As Ranmaru fidgeted beside him, his features marked by distress, Okami finished his tea in silence. The only comfort he offered his friend was to pour him another cup of sake. Then Okami stood, following the path the Maiko Yumi had taken not long before. Once Okami took his leave, Mariko debated how best to proceed, her mind a tangle of thoughts. It was clear Ranmaru and Okami were in love with the same girl. Strangely, this conflict had yet to seed any obvious enmity in their friendship. The only reason Mariko could gather for this was that Yumi served a far more important purpose. The unlocked door in Mariko's mind swung open. Yumi had to be someone of great significance to the Black Clan. In that moment, Mariko was gripped by the need to know what purpose the girl served. The need to know anything and everything about the Maiko. This undeniable weakness. Awareness forcing her to take action, Mariko tossed back a final cup of sake, then decided to take advantage of Ranmaru's distressed state of mind. She stammered as she asked one of the attendants to direct her to a place where she could relieve herself. Once Mariko left the tea room, she made her way down a connecting corridor toward an enclosed courtyard with an elegantly raked footpath and a tiny brook snaking through its center. She whipped around the next corner before crashing to a halt. Across the courtyard, Okami and Yumi stood swathed in shadow beneath a low-hanging eave. They spoke in subdued tones, the Maiko within embracing distance of the wolf. Mariko's breath drew short when she saw the expression on Okami's face as he listened to the beautiful girl speak. It was an expression of warmth, understanding, compassion, undeniably of love. The wolf wore the look well, surprisingly well, considering his earlier disdain for the sentiment. Had she not seen it with her own eyes, Mariko would never have believed it. In contrast, Yumi appeared strangely conflicted. Her shoulders sagged, and Mariko saw the girl's fingers grip her silken sleeves. When Yumi's head fell forward, some invisible weight taking its toll, Okami took her in his arms, pulling her close, offering her comfort.
Another pang of annoyance cut through Mariko, just beneath her heart. She could not understand what Okami saw in this girl, beyond the embarrassingly obvious. Frankly, Mariko expected better of him. It was unwise of him to flaunt his affections in such a manner. Earlier he'd claimed to appreciate Mariko's stance on love, claimed to understand her position on emotions in general. This entire display was foolish, a waste of his time, especially on a girl who was a potential source of conflict with Ranmaru. Mariko pursed her lips. It did not matter if Okami and Ranmaru were at odds with each other. Indeed, it might be better if they were, for her purposes. With a roll of her shoulders, she pressed into the shadows, trying to determine a way to move within earshot of Okami and Yumi. She recalled what she and Kenshin had done as children when they'd wished to spy on their elders. They'd licked a finger and pressed it to one of the rice paper screens, forming a tiny hole through which to eavesdrop. But of course, the screens in this tea house were fashioned of silk, as if its builders realized the need for utmost discretion in all corners of Hanami. With no obvious way to intrude at hand, Mariko looked upward. The low-hanging eave on this end of the courtyard was within reach. She could grab hold of it and shimmy along the roofline. If she could get close enough, Mariko might be able to hear all that passed between Okami and Yumi. Mariko studied the intricately formed copper lanterns dangling at intervals along every wooden eave. They mirrored the lanterns along the exterior of the main tea house, only these were smaller. Some were not yet lit, for it seemed the proprietors of the tea house believed the silver light of the full moon was more than enough to illumine its inner courtyard, despite the fleece of clouds gathering above. She braced a foot along a support beam and clambered onto the tiled roof, her movements masked by the steady din from below. Once Mariko settled in place, she considered standing, but realized the tabi socks on her feet would not provide the necessary traction to move about freely. So instead, she crawled like a spider across the curved roof tiles, keeping her head low. When she glanced over the ridge at the crest of the roofline, Mariko almost slid from her perch, her pulse on a sudden rampage. It's not possible! There, standing by the waterfalls near the entrance of the finest tea house in Hanami, stood a face to mirror her own. A face Mariko had been raised alongside. A face she understood as no one else ever could. Hattori Kenshin. The Dragon of Kai had finally found her. The Swinging Lantern. Mariko thought quickly, her mind ablaze. What is Kenshin doing here? It was possible her brother had tracked her to Inako, though it did seem highly unlikely anyone could follow her bizarre trail through a mountainous forest, back to the Imperial City. But if there was even a remote possibility, Mariko knew Kenshin would be the one to do it. Which meant it was also possible he knew the Black Clan was responsible for the attack on her convoy. Now, Mariko was met with the consequences. Impossibly, here her brother stood. Kenshin waited beside the Blue Lagoon as his two hooded companions spoke to the attendants at the gate. Even from a distance, Mariko could see the concern on his face, the deep-seated worry. She scrambled to make sense of it all, scrambled to form a plan. However Kenshin had managed to track her here, Mariko could not allow him to find her. She'd risked too much to get this far. I am not ready to cede control, not yet, nor am I ready to go back home. Her brother had not arrived at the tea house alone. Two other nobles had entered the gates with him. One's from an extremely wealthy family, judging by their clothing. The way several other attendants materialized from the shadows to assist their every need only further proved the point. When four members of the Imperial Guard stepped beneath the glow of the lanterns to their right, Mariko's heart crashed into her stomach. The two young men accompanying Kenshin were from the inner ranks of the Imperial Court, possibly even members of the royal family itself. Mariko searched for signs of their crests,
tried to see past their resplendent cloaks. Was it possible one of these hooded men was her betrothed? Minamoto Raiden? Mariko swallowed, her nerves wound tight, her pulse trilling through her veins. If her brother and his royal companions found Mariko here, in the company of the Empire's most notorious thieves, scrambling on the rooftop of Hanami's most fashionable tea house, the ensuing scene could prove disastrous. It would undermine all her plans, undermine her wish to spare her family any embarrassment, and prove her worth beyond the marriage market. Undermine her chance to discover who had plotted to murder her. Not to mention the scandal that would unfold when it was revealed that Minamoto Raiden's bride-to-be had disappeared only to reemerge, dressed as a boy. Lastly, Mariko did not even want to consider what might happen if a fight were to occur between Kenshin and any member of the Black Clan, much less with Okami. Mariko shuddered as she contemplated the possibility. Kenshin was the finest samurai she'd ever known, but not a single warrior she knew moved like the wolf. No, Mariko could never allow the two to cross paths. As her panic continued to rise, the taller of Kenshin's companions lowered the hood of his cloak. Even from her perch along the roofline, Mariko saw the silver crest stamped into the hood's silken inlay. A trio of genshin flowers and a sprig of bamboo leaves. The crest of the Minamoto clan. Her terror spiked in a white-hot flash, in an uncontrollable plume. She'd never seen Minamoto Raiden before, but she knew from past accounts that he was tall. A gifted member of the Yabusame. Chiyo had all but swooned when Mariko's betrothal had been made official. Even without proof, Mariko could easily surmise that her brother's taller, broader companion was likely her betrothed. Which meant that the slighter companion, the reedier boy still cloaked and shielded by Imperial guards. Mariko's body went numb as though a wintry gale had blown across the rooftop. The Crown Prince of Wa. Takeda Ranmaru had been exiled by Minamoto Masaru. Though Ranmaru had not specifically said the Emperor's name that night by the Juboko, Mariko was not a fool. Okami and Ranmaru believed their fathers had been betrayed and murdered by the Emperor. Nothing good could come of their sons meeting by chance in a tea house deep within Hanami on a dark summer night. Consumed with worry, Mariko watched from her perch as Genshin rinsed his hands in the same basin she'd used a few hours ago. Watched as he waited to enter the same tea house. It was now impossible to return to her place in the main room. If Genshin saw her, he would recognize her before she could swallow her next breath. Panic took hold when Mariko realized that Okami was doubling back toward the tea house with Yumi at his side. Which meant his path would soon cross that of her brother. If Okami returned and discovered Mariko missing, he would undoubtedly ask Ranmaru where she had gone. The two would begin making inquiries. They would learn she had not simply disappeared to relieve herself. And her brother would hear everything. Without knowing exactly what information Kenshin already possessed, it was leaving too much to chance. Mariko had to get the Black Clan to leave the tea house with her in tow, before Kenshin caught wind of anything that might be afoot. Because if the Dragon of Kai was here to find her, he would find her. Her brother would not give up until he did. And she could not allow that to happen. Not yet. The way she saw it, Mariko had two immediate options. She could either attempt to distract her brother by creating a commotion in his vicinity, perhaps by flinging the single throwing star she'd pilfered from Haruki, or she could create a diversion around Okami, away from the main tea room. The kind of diversion that would grant them a chance to summon Ranmaru to their side, so they could all escape without being seen. When faced with the decision to possibly threaten her brother, and coincidentally the Crown Prince of Wa, or Okami, Mariko's choice was easy. She grabbed the chain of an unlit copper lantern behind her, hauled it onto the roof, took careful aim. As soon as Okami came within range, Mariko swung the lantern into his path, intent on catching him off guard. She hoped that, with the sliver of time this small